Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing mostly last night's, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, Crown Jewel from Saudi Arabia at 347-215-8486, 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. An awful lot to talk about at Crown Jewel. Very, very interesting premium live event. And we're going to go in depth in each one of these matches and analyze them, give you our thoughts and opinions. But before we get started, there is at least one article of news I want to address, and that, once again, is Billy Corrigan's NWA. Now, I had missed this somehow, and I had already told you that Samhain, the pay-per-view that they did, some people pronounce it Samhain, it's Samhain, but anyway, the pay-per-view they did was horrific. I told you on the last show, it was horrific. And it was horribly disappointing as far as what we could expect on the CW. But I missed something, obviously. I missed a segment where apparently there were some wrestlers and managers shown kayfabe, partying, drinking alcohol, and apparently using cocaine. Now, obviously, this was rigged. It wasn't really cocaine. They probably weren't really drinking. But nonetheless, that's what it depicted. And I'm told this was Billy Corrigan's bright idea. Let's have a segment where the wrestlers are in the back and they're snorting cocaine and drinking. Congratulations, asshole, because the CW has canceled your deal. Oh, they're going to put you on, but they're going to put you on their app. They're not going to put you on television. They've decided your product is not worth their television time. So they're going to put you on an app, the CW app. You may as well just stay on YouTube. You blew the damn deal. Here I was for months saying Billy Corrigan is a better businessman. He understands the business a little bit better. He's not a money mark. And what the hell did the guy do when he got his very first chance at a TV deal? He blew it with a crapola pay-per-view that was filled with his own nonsense and the own crap that he wants to do in his booking, which is obviously somehow demented. If you really thought in your wildest dreams that the CW was not going to watch your pay-per-view and make some kind of decision based upon what they saw, then you are in la-la land, my friend. Maybe you should be back to partying and snorting the cocaine, because quite obviously you're not thinking clearly. So congrats. I don't know if he can work his way out of this. I don't know. I don't know if he can go to them and apologize and promise to keep things on tighter rein. To be honest with you, I think the CW is using this as an excuse. I think they said, oh, well, we can easily kill the deal now that he did that. But the pay-per-view was shit, and we really don't want this shit on our network anyway. So maybe we can use that as an excuse. Because really, the CW could only say, okay, well, listen, that was a pay-per-view. You can't do anything like that on television. And that would have been acceptable, right? So I think they're using it as an excuse, because when they saw what the product really was, I don't know what has happened to this. I have never seen the decline so quickly. NWA, for a short period of time, was cranking on all cylinders. I want you to understand the people they had over there. They had Ricky Starks. They had Eli Drake. They had James Storm. They had Trevor Murdoch. They had Aaron Stevens. They had Nick Aldis. They had Tyrus. They were doing well. And now look. Abject, complete disaster. And when the news came that the CW had said, we're just going to put them on the app, we're not going to put them on the air, Mike, I knew something like this was coming.
I knew something like this was coming. You know, and we usually compared what might be happening a few weeks back, what might be in the future for NWA and a place like TNA, right? NWA, both of them kind of have a name, both of them this, that, and the other, but TNA doesn't make these kind of mistakes usually. In general, they don't make this kind of mistake. So it's likely that TNA could get a TV deal on a CW or on any one of these TVs, you know, rather than be on Access or whatever the hell they are, whatever the hell they're on right now. But it's likely they can and still be on actual TV. You know?
Yeah, this is a mistake that you just don't make. You just don't make it. I'm sorry. As much as we get on Tony Khan, and believe me, there's plenty to get on there with Tony Khan, with booking that's so disastrous that they can't sell 4,000 tickets live in a 20,000-seat arena, Billy Corrigan has lost his goddamn mind. Tom, I don't know what he figured. I guess he figured, I'm going to make this the most outrageous pay-per-view I can, and then people are going to be like, they can't wait to tune in to see the show because it's going to be so wild. They got all kinds of things. They got riddle box matches where people are pulling out slingshots and rubber chickens, and they've got people backstage pretending to snort cocaine and drink, and they've got all kinds of cool stuff. And what he failed to realize is this is just the kiss of death. Because no television network that broadcasts to the mainstream is going to allow that.
Well, let me paint a little picture and make a comparison. This is almost reminiscent of Vince Russo working for the WWE, jumping ship to WCW. They go out of business, and like maybe a year later, Vince McMahon hires him back, and he lasted a day. Because he was like, I have all these ideas, and they were just out of this world. Probably even you know, up there with Billy Corgan's pay-per-view this past week. And Vince McMahon was just like, what did I do? Oh my God, what did I do? And this is almost reminiscent of that. It's very like I don't know what he expected, that CW was not going to watch and see what kind of return they're going to get on whatever investment they made into it. It was the drizzling.
I don't know. And there's such obvious mistakes. I mean, I had people say to me, well, you know, you're missing the point. The point was that the one tag team were clowns. So when they pulled out the balloons and they pulled out the slingshots, it was, you know, goofy. They were supposed to be goofy. They were clowns. Okay. But then the way you handle that is the other team is dead serious. So the other team, when they realize that these clowns are pulling out nothing but dumb stuff like rubber chickens and little plastic slingshots with ping pong balls, they have no fear. And they just dismantle these clowns. And then the last friggin' box, the clowns pull out something dead serious, and they weren't ready for it. And that way it would have been like, oh, we lulled you into a false sense of security. You thought we were all yuck, yuck, ha, 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 and bam, we got you. That would have made sense. This did not make sense, but what he did. And I don't know why you have to show people, you know, kayfabe snorting cocaine. That's not edgy. That's just dumb. Even drinking heavily, that's just dumb. Just plain dumb. Unforced error. What are you going to say? If he ends up on the CW app, well, he's on the CW app now. Congratulations. You're not even really on a television network. You're on an app. You may as well just go to Tubi. Unreal. It's just unreal. Anyway, let's get right into Crown Jewel because this was a very, very interesting program, to say the least. We started out with Sami Zayn against McDonough, and listen, Sami Zayn is way over, right? The crowd loved him. Sami's of Syrian descent. He really wasn't welcome in Saudi Arabia for a long period of time, and he didn't want to go due to political differences, but man, crowd really has embraced Sami Zayn. McDonough damn near killed himself in one spot and got such a mat burn. I have not seen anybody get a mat burn in years, literally years and years and years and years and years, because they now what they use for that mat is way different than, like, they used to use canvas and stuff, which is easy to get a mat burn. Now they really don't. It's totally different. Hard to get a mat burn, but he managed it. And it looked nasty and it looked painful. Nothing special in this match. I mean, we knew Sami Zayn was going to go over. McDonough got in some decent offense, looked okay. I still say McDonough's not going to be any guy that rises to any huge prominence in WWE. He's going to be more of the guy who makes other people look good. Aside from that, Todd, the opening pre-show match, I guess, was decent.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that opening match with McDonough and Zayn here yesterday at the Crown Jewel pay-per-view, it was a pretty good match. You know, McDonough got quite a bit of offense, but like you said, with McDonough, he's just going to be like there, like a lower mid-card, just to put people over and. It's a shame on that part.
Yeah, I guess it is. Maybe they could form a tag team with him and Balor and be a little bit better than just mid-card. You know, I could see them holding titles even, but him by himself, no. Decent overall match, Mike, but how the hell did McDonough get that kind of a burn from the mat?
I don't know. And what makes it even worse is he's kind of like Sheamus in the fact that he's really light, you know, he's really light, and we've said it before with Sheamus. You hit Sheamus hard enough, and you're going to see it. I mean, those matches versus Gunther, where Gunther was just knocking the shit out of Sheamus, and you saw the welts on Sheamus's chest. That's what he does. That's what I saw from McDonough. He's that guy. He's that guy that you can see what kind of, it was bad, and yeah, you don't usually see it, but it was even worse because of the type of body he has, you know, the type of reactions his skin gives off with the...
Yeah, he's got a very pale tone to him, but, you know, McDonough's one of those guys that bumps so well and so often that he's going to get stuck in that just go bump for these guys and make them look good mold, and I think he already is stuck in it, to be really honest. Okay match, Tom, although McDonough almost killed himself twice.
Well, I actually missed the pre-show match, and I had to go back and watch it, and man, I don't even know how he managed to get Matt Burns, since the material is not the same as it was back in the day, but that looked awful. But give him some credit, man. He still went on, a few more minutes after that happened, so maybe a little more. So he wrestled with it, and he was taking bumps on it. And I will say this, that it really looked like the crowd not only embraced Sami Zayn, but the roof blew off this place when he gave him the Kaluva kick, and it damn near looked like it took his head off.
Yeah, it's really good to see this sort of thing because, you know, I fluctuated back and forth a lot when it comes to the Saudi Arabian deal. Should we do it? Should we not do it? We have some evidence that Saudi Arabia could have been behind 9/11 or some of the finance. There was a lot of issues with Saudi Arabia and the United States. I was really fluctuating back and forth. Is this a good thing or is this a bad thing? But at the end of the day, let's really look at this in a serious light. When the WWE first went there, the women were not allowed. Anyone who was openly gay was not allowed. And Sami Zayn was not allowed because of his Syrian heritage. When they put a picture of Carmella just dancing on a promo, the Saudi Arabian government went nuts. Absolutely lost their mind over it. Threatened the WWE with breach of contract and all kinds of other things. We have went from that to not only are the women welcome, they're featured. Not only is Sami Zayn allowed in, he's welcomed with open arms. And I have to tell you that I do think maybe they were right when they said we could potentially bring about some change, because they have. That brought about some change. And as much as I dislike the government and distrust the government of Saudi Arabia, it's very hard for me to take a hard-line stance and say, never go back again, when I see so many young people in that audience just having the time of their life. And none of that's their fault. They didn't choose their government. They're too young. So I don't know. I'm starting to soften a little bit on this. I mean, we do other business with Saudi Arabia. There's many, many companies in the United States that does business with Saudi Arabia. The UFC is now going to as well, by the way. But there's many, many businesses that do. And we also do business with Iran. We do businesses with countries that want to kill us. So I'm thinking to myself, how do you really come down too hard on the WWE when at least the business that they do is entertainment for the people and not just feeding greedy oil sheiks and corporations? So I'm softening a little bit on that. Anyway, we started out the main card with Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. And I have to tell you, I was really surprised. I knew that Seth Rollins was going to put on a good match. I said this could steal the show. I think it did. I honestly think it did. This was a very, very strong match. And it was a no BS match because I thought we're going to get a BS ending to this. We're going to get some nonsensical Judgment Day coming down, and maybe they're for Seth, maybe they're for Drew. Both are distracted. Neither guy beat the other guy at their best type thing. That did not happen. There were times in this match where I legitimately said, I think they're going to give this to Drew McIntyre. Maybe he signed his contract and that was part of the negotiation. I don't know, but man, there was times when he gave him that kick, the Claymore kick, I said, well, it is over, because I don't recall anybody kicking out of it except I think Gunther did once. But nobody like Seth Rollins. And I'm like, shit, he did. And then when the curb stomp came, I said, well, okay, well, Drew McIntyre's done. And he kicked out of that. Very, very interesting how they booked this. And it had a really interesting finish in that it really took three moves to finish off Drew McIntyre, made him look very strong. These guys went way longer than I thought, and I want people to go back and watch this if you doubt me. Drew McIntyre didn't sweat in this match. He wasn't even sweating. Now, I want you to understand that a little bit later on, Logan Paul was literally covered in sweat before the bell rang. Just coming down to the ring and jogging around a little bit, he was sweating profusely. The cardiovascular shape that Drew McIntyre is in is unreal for a guy his size. I could see Seth Rollins. He's a CrossFit guy. He's only maybe 210 pounds. It's possible. A guy the size of Drew McIntyre should not be in that kind of cardio shape. It's amazing. It's actually amazing. When they did the close-ups, and I said, he's not even sweating. 10, 12 minutes of this match, he's not even sweating. That's absolutely incredible, Mike. And I thought this was an excellent match, start to finish.
This is a guy. This is a guy who's what, almost 40, in Drew McIntyre, who's probably, if they wanted to, they could. This could have been an hour plus match if they wanted to, because both of these two guys can go and could go for a long time. I mean, and it would have been a fun match to see that go that long. I mean, this could do this match again in a few months, and if Drew signs, and do it as an Iron Man match, you know, that would be fun. And as far as the crowd goes, tell me if I'm wrong with the crowd. It seemed like for the first two, maybe four matches, whatever it was, the two, three, four matches, the crowd was live. It was there, right? It was hot. Yep. It was there. It was good. After about the third match or so, they kind of, it almost seemed like they kind of cheered themselves out. They kind of knocked themselves out for the rest of the pay-per-view. Oh, they were there, but they weren't there, you know?
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think a part of it is this pay-per-view went backwards. Whereas you usually start and build up to the better matches, I think they saw the best match first. And then things started to, like, level out a little bit where it wasn't as hot as people thought it would be. What's your thoughts on the match? Let's go to Tom.
Well, I got to say, the crowd for this match was absolutely electric, from singing Seth Rollins' song to some impressive feats of strength, namely the reverse of the suplex into another suplex, reverse of the superplex, rather, into a suplex.
Yeah.
That's one of Seth Rollins' moves. He does a superplex and then the Falcon Arrow, right? So Drew reversed it. And I'm like, that's insane. And all the things, like, I was on the absolute edge of my seat because those fans were just out of this world with how passionate they were. And you're right. I do have to, you know, piggyback on the unbelievable amount of cardio shape that Drew McIntyre is in. I think it was 15, 16 minutes, and it looks like he didn't break a sweat. It was just amazing. And the fact that it really took three moves to finish off Drew McIntyre, these guys, I'm going to give this match of the night, honestly. Because I haven't been on the edge of my seat for a match like that in quite a long time.
Yeah, this is the thing about Drew McIntyre that goes unnoticed. We already know about Seth Rollins. We know that Seth Rollins is one of those guys, he's going to put on a good match every time, every single time. Doesn't matter whether he's in there against, you know, a preliminary guy or he's in there against a, you know, world beater, he always puts on a good match. But when he's with somebody like Drew McIntyre, McIntyre's underrated. I've said that for a long time. McIntyre's very underrated. People are getting used to him as being like a power guy or a, you know, kick and punch brawler type guy, big, strong, powerful, kick you, beat you type guy. But Drew McIntyre can wrestle. And when he wants to put on a match where he's wrestling, he can do it, and he can do it well. And we saw that last night. Really good match. I wasn't even really sure halfway through. I said, I don't know who's going to win this. I picked Seth Rollins. I said that they're not going to give it to Drew McIntyre unless he re-signed, obviously. But, man, Todd, about halfway through this match, I was thinking maybe he did.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Dale. Like you said, that match last night with Rollins and McIntyre there, you saw, like, a lot of false finishes in that. And like you said about Drew McIntyre, this guy never broke a sweat in that match. He never broke a sweat. Like, he's in shape and not to break a sweat.
Apparently, he has no sweat glands because I just don't know how you do that. But, yeah, incredible. Really incredible match. Mike is right. The crowd was so into this match. And here's what I loved, the crowd in this match. They didn't really boo Drew McIntyre either. they took this match for what it was, two faces going at each other trying to decide who the best man is. I was really impressed with that crap. And I was impressed that they didn't pull a sneaky Drew McIntyre tries to cheat type thing. I still think he's turning heel. Absolutely think he's turning heel. But they didn't do it last night. Now, I realize I said that was the opening match. It wasn't. It was John Cena and Solo. So let's go to that. The reason I forgot this, I think I'm in shock. I'm still in shock. I went back and I watched John Cena say, in no uncertain terms, if I don't win this match, then there's no reason for me to continue my wrestling career. There's no reason for me to come out here in front of you people anymore. I'm not only winning it for myself, I'm winning it for you who believed in me through my whole career. And when he said, you guys believed in me through my whole career, I'm going to win it for you, I said, well, there's no way he's losing. And he lost. And he lost pretty bad. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you've kind of done this ass backwards, and here's why. If you want to push Solo, I'm all for it. I'm all for pushing Solo as toughest guy in the universe, if that's what you want to do. But then you can't have him lose to Cody Rhodes, and you can't have him lose to L.A. Knight. Because if he lost to Cody Rhodes and L.A. Knight, and L.A. Knight basically squashed him, then you can't have him beat John Cena. Here's something else you can't do. You can't have him give one of his finishers to Ridge Holland, and Ridge Holland can't talk for 2 weeks. And he gives 11 of them to John Cena, and John Cena's just fine. Can't do that. Because, you see, now you're convoluting things. If John Cena's so tough he can take 11 of them, then he should be able to beat Solo. Because nobody else is able to take one. So I'm really confused about where you're going with this. I'm really super confused. This one threw me for a loop because this would have been my lock of the pay-per-view because, I mean, when you talk like that and say I'm going to do it for the fans who supported me, there's only two things I can think of. One is the writer's strike is over, John Cena is gone, and you're not going to be seeing him for a long time, if ever. And some people have said he kind of hinted his retirement. Or two, this is a big setup. And we're going to get something at WrestleMania where John Cena says, you know, I will retire if I lose. This is my last test. That's the only thing I can think of. Now, John Cena's done this before. He let Brock Lesnar squash him, if you remember. And John Cena's, laid down for a lot of people. But in this particular instance, and in the way you booked it, with John Cena saying this is the litmus test of whether I still have it to compete or not, and this is a match I need to win for all the people who supported me through all the years, very unusual to have him lose. Very unusual. I don't know what to say about it. I mean, it wasn't a great match. John Cena is only capable of doing so much these days, and Solo is Solo, you know, and I'm looking at it saying this is one of those situations where I think the crowd expected more and didn't really get more, Mike. The crowd was into it, but they were certainly into the into John Cena. And I really thought because Saudi Arabia is a different universe, doesn't mean anything if Solo loses in Saudi Arabia. I really thought Cena would probably take that.
Yeah, I did too. And here's something else to think about. This isn't late 20s, early 30s John Cena, right? Where he was Super Cena, right? Nothing. You couldn't give him a stomp. You couldn't give him, you know, a spear. You couldn't give him, you know, F5. You'd have to give him multiple F5s or whatever the hell it is. And he'd get up anyway, right? This isn't that John Cena. This is mid-40s-year-old John Cena. Close to retirement, probably this is, if not the last, probably close to the last match he's ever going to do in the WWE. This isn't John Cena from 20 years, 15 years ago, you know, where he could take anything and get up, right? That's the problem people had with John Cena back then. He could take anything and get up. That's why they called him Super Cena, right?
Yeah, I just thought that, you know, under these circumstances, they try to at least make his retirement match WrestleMania. And I still think they might. I still think John Cena is going to come out and say, this is it for me. You know, I did my best. It wasn't good enough. He'll get chided into one more match at WrestleMania. I really believe that's probably going to happen, unless he is not available because of his schedule with pictures. I don't know. It really surprised me, Tom. I really thought Cena was going to take this.
Well, I agree with you. This actually was, truth be told, my lock of the pay-per-view because Cena made that speech, and I said, there's no way he's losing. You know, Solo's been on a downward spiral. He said he was going to win it for the fans who believed in him. And just when I was like, okay, well, this is definitely a lock, the announcers were so quick to let everybody know that the last time Cena won a match was 5 years ago, and weirdly enough, in Saudi Arabia. So by pinning Triple H, and I'm like, why would they say that? That kind of gives it away. That kind of gives it away. Now I know Solo's winning. Now, keep in mind, I also say that he said speech that he did to the folks in the United States, not in Saudi Arabia. So maybe they're going to have another match, probably end his career at WrestleMania. Again, he could only do so much. The match was what it was. It did a good amount to get Solo back on with a win, which is good because he dropped, you know, two major matches. So he got a win, and he got some heat after the match, and John Cena said his goodbye, and the crowd did give him a tremendous ovation, which was very heartwarming because the crowd loves John Cena.
They really do. I'm just, and again, I just don't know what changed, because you would think that that's a no-brainer. Even the way they booked it, where Solo hit him with the first Samoan spike, but then really didn't go for the cover. So I'm like, oh, well, he didn't go for the cover because he would have to beat him if he went for the cover. So the gimmick is going to be Solo is going to give him one or two of them, maybe three, but he's not going to pin him. And all of a sudden, Cena's going to come up with that quick attitude adjustment, one, two, three. That's what's going to happen. And they're going to say, well, Solo could have beat him three times over, but his ego got in the way. That, it really looked like that's the way the booking was going. So when he gave him that seven of them in a row there, I was like, holy shit. I was really surprised, Todd, to see John Cena lose that match.
Oh, so right there, like you said, I was shocked as well with that match, too, with Cena loss. Like, we were all rooting for Cena to win that victory against Solo Sikoa, and like you said, it's just a shocking moment for us fans.
See, I don't care that Solo even wins. It wasn't like I was rooting for John Cena, but I'm just saying, logically speaking, I don't know how you end your career that way. Now, you always go out on your back, but you're going out on your back for Solo? If you're going to go out on your back, see, here's what I thought was really going to happen. I'll break down what I thought was going to happen. I thought Solo was going to get cocky, hit him with a Samoan spike, not pin him, pick him up, hit him again with it, stall, go for a third one, miss it, get attitude adjusted, one, two, three, and we were building to John Cena versus Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. I really thought we might get that. Big match, John. This is his last hurrah, possibly winning that belt for one last time, for just probably not keep it for long. And I thought to myself, that makes some sense. I don't know where we go from here now. I really don't. I don't know where we go from here. So it'll be interesting to find out. Anyway, next up, Cody Rhodes versus Damian Priest. And I'm going to call this my disappointing match of the night. I thought this was a fairly lethargic match. There was never a time when I thought Damian Priest was close to winning or even going to win. And I just think it was stale. It felt stale. That's the only way I can really describe it. And as far as Damian Priest in the briefcase, which, by the way, Sami Zayn stole in that match with Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins, which made no sense because Seth Rollins wasn't really injured. And he comes down like he's going to cash it in on an injured Seth Rollins, maybe exhausted but not injured. And Sami Zayn steals the briefcase. And we never see Sami Zayn again, by the way. Anyway, this was a disappointment. If you have such ambitions for Damian Priest that you've still got that briefcase in his hand, he didn't look too good against Cody Rhodes. Now, I knew Cody was going to win, but my assumption was there was going to be a reason, and the reason was going to be the Judgment Day totally screwing up. Well, it came down, but the bottom line of the situation is Damian Priest just lost, flat out lost. In a match that, and honestly, I didn't find all that exciting or all that interesting. Don't think they work extremely well together. And I don't think it was well booked. And it just seemed like every other Judgment Day match, if I didn't know it was a premium live event, I'd be like, well, this is just, you know, typical WWE TV match, Mike. And the premium live events should never be that way.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. This was one of these matches that actually did give the fans a period of time to rest, you know, because it was so slow, so lethargic. The fans, they were great for most of the time, but this was one of the times when they just weren't because of the match. It's not. And the booking, you know, I mean, maybe those fans over there don't understand, but obviously they know the WWE. They have a rudimentary, because they can see it on satellite or however they see the WWE, you know, Raw, SmackDown, whatever, you know, obviously they can see it. So they know how it basically works, so, and they kind of figured out that this was a match that was just not, was boring, basically. You can see this on any Monday night.
That's what it felt like. It just felt like a Monday Night Raw match, and, you know, I understand it's a long way to Saudi Arabia, and I understand jet lag, and I understand all that stuff, but it didn't affect anybody else. And here we go with, listen, I know Cody Rhodes is over. And I know Cody Rhodes is a really nice guy who cares about the fans. And that's legit. And I know he's, you know, someone they look to for the future, but he can't be putting on matches like this. Seth Rollins isn't doing that. These type of matches was so fundamental and so rudimentary, I could have just closed my eyes and imagined it. There was nothing that made me go, I didn't see that coming, or, oh, there's something they broke out different, or, oh, that was a good series or whatever. It was just there. It was just there. It reminded me of a house show match, Tom. It did nothing for me.
It really was. And this was the match that, initially, I thought, since the crowd woke up out of their collective stupors for this one, as they were all cheered out, gave Cody a tremendous ovation. The ring work was good, but the shenanigans started and then were spoiled by Jey Uso's super kick party. And Damian Priest, this was Monday Night Raw or a house show match. Pretty much like any other Judgment Day match, but it could, you know, I'm thinking that the WWE should be smart enough to pull the trigger on the fact that Damian Priest lost again, and it was the fault of the interference, you know, first by JD McDonough, then by then by Dominic, only to be foiled by Jey Uso. This should be the straw that breaks the camel's back, no pun intended. And Damian Priest should now, you know, split away from the Judgment Day or make them make a choice.
I don't see it coming, though. It looks to me like he's going to start a feud with Sami Zayn over that briefcase. What it looks like. I don't know. I mean, if you're relegating him now to feuding with Sami Zayn, do you really think he's cashing that briefcase in successfully? He absolutely isn't going to. Todd, very mediocre match, I thought.
Oh, you're absolutely right. Yeah, like you said, that match last night with Cody Rhodes and Damian Priest there, like you said, it was an okay match, but it was not great either. And, you know, it's just one of those, I feel like it was a house show match to me as well, and like an indie show mostly.
Yeah, it just didn't wow me at all. Again, you know, those guys usually put on good matches, a good performance, but whoever booked this match really booked it like a TV match. I know they wanted to get Jey Uso out there. They wanted to show the crowd all the other guys and everything. I get it, but man, oh man, at least you could have done something to further the storyline, and I don't see anything furthered. It's just, it is what it is. You didn't take another step forward. It was like reading the same chapter over again in a book. You're no further along than you are. The chapter's fine, but you're no further along than you were. You give us a little bit of a step forward, at least. I didn't see anything in there that was a little bit of a step forward. We then get to Rey Mysterio versus Logan Paul for the U.S. Championship. Before, I'm going to say it again, I'm not a big fan of Logan Paul's personality. Not a big fan of his blog show. Not a big fan of him and his stupid boxing career. However, every single time that Logan Paul has stepped into a WWE ring, I have been left stupefied. I just have no idea how somebody who just has a little to no experience is this good. It is absolutely incredible. And I'm not overstating that. It's absolutely incredible. Dominic Mysterio was raised in a wrestling family. And he's not as good right now as Logan Paul is. It's unbelievable. It's almost like he's just a natural. I've not seen anything like this. In the entire time that I've watched professional wrestling, I have never seen anyone with this type of experience be this good. I'm going to tell you something. I hope you guys saw this. Logan Paul literally probably saved Rey Mysterio from breaking his damn neck. And to have the wherewithal to do that with no experience is almost unbelievable. Now, it came when Rey Mysterio was trying to do the springboard off the ropes. Now, granted, the inexperience of Logan Paul showed a little bit here because Logan Paul was a little too far away. And Rey Mysterio was going to have a hard time launching himself that far. But that's not why Rey was in danger, because you could have done the booking where Rey springboarded and Logan Paul just moved and Rey crashed and burned. Rey didn't get the full turnover, and he was about to land on his head. Not on his face, not on his stomach, on his head. Now, that has nothing to do with Logan Paul. Logan Paul could have been a million miles away, and Rey still was going to land on his head. Or Logan Paul could have been right next to him, and Rey still didn't get that full twist that he wanted, that full rotation, I should say. When Logan Paul saw that he was going to crash and burn, he caught him very high and then turned it into an actual wrestling move. I've never seen that from somebody that inexperienced in my life. Never, ever seen that. To have that sort of ring presence when you're that inexperienced, it's almost spooky. It's like the little kid who sits down and plays the piano after two lessons, and you're like, I don't know, he's playing Beethoven. How the hell does that happen? It doesn't normally. It's weird. And it's a very weird thing how Logan Paul has taken to professional wrestling. If he is a smart man, which I assume he is, you need to throw all of your effort into this. You need to throw all of your time into this because you were born for this. And I don't say that lightly. If there was ever anybody that I've seen that was born to be a professional wrestler, it is Logan Paul. I don't know why. He just instinctually has it. It's a gift. It's just like some kid who just opens their mouth and they can bellow out a song and you're like, how? I don't know how. Well, this is another thing. I don't know how he does this. Even at the end, as goofy as the end was, with his goofy friend there throwing him brass knuckles and missing, and Santos Escobar chasing the guy out but leaving the brass knuckles on the ringside, which was goofy, and him hitting Ray with the brass knuckles and winning, even as goofy as that finish was, followed by a stroke of brilliance, where Logan Paul literally goes over to Rey Mysterio and says, you know I did what I had to do. You know I love you. You know I think the world. And Rey Mysterio's like, you know what you did. You know what you did. I love the type of heel that Logan Paul is. He's not, I don't care if Rey Mysterio dies. He's just like, I'm going to do what I have to do to win. Doesn't mean I don't like him. Doesn't mean I don't respect him. Doesn't mean I don't, have some fans or I hate all the fans or I hate all the good guys or whatever. I'm just going to do what I need to do to win. He's such a realistic heel because of that. Because when heels are so dastardly and they're like, they're tying the girls to the railroad tracks while they're twisting their mustache and saying, now I've got you. That looks corny. His style of being a heel looked very real. Very real. It's just an amazing job. It wasn't a five-star match. In fact, it was less of a match than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be better than it was. But I will tell you this. If there's ever been anyone I have ever seen that belongs in a professional wrestling ring full-time, it is Logan Paul. And this is coming from a guy who admittedly does not like him. So, I don't know, Mike. I've seen some weird things. But when I saw him correct Rey Mysterio's mistake, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. You have just got to be kidding me. I'm going to guarantee you that there are people in that locker room who have done this for 10 years who wouldn't have caught it. 10 years. Just amazing.
That's absolutely amazing. I mean, he's a guy that people are going to want to work with because he's a guy that knows how to correct mistakes on the fly. And that's exactly what he did. That was one of the few mistakes I've seen Rey Mysterio make over the past, say, 5 or 6 years. All right?
Right.
That he's been this late in his career, of course. He's 50. But ever since, and Rey doesn't make mistakes hardly that often. So that's the thing. But, man, spotted that night with that flipping, like, power slam that he did. That moonsault power slam or whatever it was, that was – every time you see him, he pulls out something different that you say, how the hell did he do that?
Yeah, let me tell you something. For the people today who are saying he does not deserve to be the champion, you're very wrong. You're very wrong. Not only does he deserve to be, this is going to be a lot of fun because I got a feeling I know where this is going, and we'll talk about it later, but – Mike has made such a good point, Tom. If you're a rookie, which certainly Logan Paul is, and they put you in there with a veteran like Rey Mysterio, you are not thinking Rey might make a mistake. You're thinking, oh, I'm in there with one of the greatest of all time. He's flawless. He never makes any mistakes. He could do this in his sleep with his eyes closed. So you're not on guard for, let me make sure he doesn't make a mistake. You're not on guard for that at all. And he still was able to do what he did, and not only just save him, but turning it into a wrestling move so it didn't look like he saved him. So it looked like I just caught him and did my own offense to him. That was an incredible piece, and I can guarantee you he earned some major respect in that locker room over that.
Let me tell you what. I was actually watching this match with a somebody who's not a – they're a fan, but just like a, you know, casual one. And they know who Logan Paul is, but they, you know, it's like, oh, Rey Mysterio back in the day, this ought to be good. There was that particular moment where Rey did not get that much, as much air as he wanted off the springboard. Logan Paul dropped to damn near Indian style, still caught him, stood up and gave him the, and gave him a power slam. As much experience as we have wrestling, I've never, and as long as we've been watching it, I've never seen anything like that. Now, I've seen them, I've seen wrestlers save each other, but like kind of like, you know, push them down or, you know, make sure that they're, you know, make sure they roll in the way so they don't land on their neck or, what you know, a la Brock Lesnar, Kurt Angle.
Years ago.
I've never seen anything like that. And I have to agree with you, with the with as goofy as the ending was, the ending of the match, but the way he went over to Rey Mysterio and said what he said, that's something that a classic heel would do that you just don't see anymore. And that stuff cannot be taught. It's almost innate for Logan Paul. It's almost like it's just like he's born with it. And there's only two people that I would ever say, I don't like Logan Paul, much like you. I think he's a goof, but his athleticism is off the charts. And there are only two people that I will say that are born professional wrestling, Shawn Michaels and Logan Paul.
Yeah, I got to tell you that Logan Paul catching on to wrestling so fast like this has been nothing short of phenomenal. And the fact that he is the type of heel he is, it would be very easy for him to do like a Miz type heel. Oh, I'm a big superstar and I'm, you know, I got this show and that show and I'm the, and he does a little of that. But he's a very realistic heel because he's not overly diabolical. You know, he still goes over to Rey Mysterio and after literally hitting him with brass knuckles and says, oh, you know, I love you. You know, I just have to do what I have to do. You know, there's no hard feelings. It's like, well, Rey Mysterio, you know what you did. That's what makes such a realistic heel that you can buy into it and believe that's really him in real life. You know what I mean? We don't have them type of heels anymore. And Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Tom said, he dropped down almost Indian style to his knees to catch him. Didn't he just recently have a torn ACL? He could have literally blown that out again.
Yeah. Yes, he did, and that's the thing. This guy, this type of heel comes around once every, let's say, 25 years, or once every 30 years, in fact. I mean, Flair was it, you know, Shawn Michaels was this type of heel. You know, I mean, think about it. How many times in your lifetime have you seen, one, a guy this talented at this sport, at this business, at this entertainment business, at sports entertainment, that's barely been in 2 years and has picked it up like nothing, right? Like, you know, like I would pick up a glass of water, you know?
The man has had five matches. He's had five matches. I've never seen that happen. Never, ever seen that happen. I'll really shock you. Go back and watch Shawn Michaels' first five matches. They weren't this good. They weren't close to this good. It's unbelievable. I don't know what the hell it is. I think that for some bizarre reason, he just is the right combination of athleticism, really natural athleticism, and sort of a natural instinct. There's an instinct there that you don't teach. That's the thing. You can teach moves. You can teach better mic skills. You can teach ring placement. You can't really teach instinct. And I think he just has instinct. It was a good match, Todd. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, Logan, I think last night, Logan Paul really solidified himself as a guy who, if he wants to, could be a WWE superstar of the highest ilk for 10 years or more.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said about Logan Paul, you know, he should have been in the WWE a couple of years ago before this. He would have made a great WWE superstar. And maybe a WWE champion a long time ago, but now he's sort of in the company for the last year and a half. Now already got championship gold.
I'll tell you this: he's found his calling, because when you can literally say I don't care for a person that much, and still look that much forward to their matches because you know they're going to be really good, that's incredible. And he's also the type of guy that it's not going to take a huge amount to flip him. Because everybody's going to say he's like that old school bad guy that everyone says he is good. He is as good as he says he is. He just has this nasty attitude. And you want to root for him, but you don't, because he's got that nasty attitude, or he cheats, or he takes the shortcuts, and then you flip him and everybody's like, oh, well, we wanted to cheer for him anyway, so now we will. He's got a hell of a future. Really, really. I think if he doesn't blow it, now he could blow it because he's one of these guys that's like, oh, well, but I also want to be a boxer. And he could get a concussion, or he could get hurt badly. Or I want to go do a talk show and I don't want to be in wrestling all the time. He better think long and hard about it. I would put all of my efforts into this for the foreseeable future. Because it's very rare that you're this good, and he can only get better. See, that's the thing. He can only get better from here. How much better can you get? He's already top level. A little more experience under him, and Lord knows. Really incredible. One of the most incredible things I've seen in recent history is this rise of Logan Paul. When he said he was going to wrestle, I was like, this is just going to be a goddamn disaster. He's going to be goofy and awkward and whatever, and he never was. Every single time, he was amazing, and last night was no exception. So when he got that championship, I'm like, the fun times are ahead. I think it's going to be fun. Next up, we had one of the weirdest entrances I think I've ever seen with Rhea Ripley. I don't know why Saudi Arabian guys were coming out with whatever the hell they had in their hands and forming a line, and I don't know why there was 100 of them. Get more and more coming, and I'm like, how long is this entrance? It's going to be longer than the match. And I don't know what the hell it has to do with Rhea Ripley. I don't know what the hell that entrance was, but it sucked. Okay? Totally, completely sucked. Here's what didn't suck. Rhea Ripley needs to keep that outfit, and she needs to keep that hairstyle. That is a bazillion times better than what she normally wears and the way she normally looks. Now she really does look the part. She looked very much like exactly what she's going for last night. When I seen her in that outfit with that hairstyle, the whole thing, I said, now that is a superstar. She was struggling before with the, like, well, you know, she looks a little... She's trying to go in between different things, and it's a little bit working, but then it's a little bit not. And last night was it. If you're the WWE, you should say that's the way you're keeping things. That's your outfit now, provided it was comfortable for you to wrestle in and you had no problems. That's the type of outfit you should be wearing. That's the way you should be wearing your hair. That's the way you should be, your body language, your mannerisms. She nailed that last night. Now, I said this was going to be the match that was going to be a clusterfuck, and I was 1,000% wrong. Even Nia Jax couldn't fuck this up. And I'm going to give some more credit to somebody. Zoe Stark was goddamn amazing. She did that thing over the cameraman, which I think took the cameraman out. So give credit to the cameraman for trying so hard to get a shot that he got one all right. She is really, really, really good. She may be the equal of Bianca Belair when it comes to athleticism. She flawlessly does things that are not easy. And last night, she was on full display. She hit her spots every single time. She was right on the money with everything she did. She was ring placement perfect. Everything perfect. She stood out in this match more than anybody else in this entire match, in my opinion. Nia Jax did her normal stuff, gets out of the ring because she's already exhausted from walking down to the ringside, bumps a few people, takes a short bump, gets out of the ring again and does next to nothing, and then exactly what I said was going to happen, lays on the outside for the finish. Give credit to Shayna Baszler for taking a move that probably didn't feel good. No matter how you do that move, that finisher that Rhea Ripley did, where she literally slams someone on two other people, who's under, or one other person that's underneath a person, that's gonna shake you up. Rhea Ripley looked phenomenal. She is going to be a major, major superstar. And here's the problem. They're going to have to turn her pretty soon. Because the crowd was 100% on her side. And you just can't have a heel that's 100% on her side. So if you're going to turn anybody in the Judgment Day, you might want to think about Rhea Ripley and making Dominic the guy who throws her over or does something horrible to her. Because at the end of the day, people want to cheer for Rhea Ripley. They're not going to boo her. They're not going to boo Rhea Ripley. And even the look that she's coming out with now is much more appealing as a face, as sort of a gothy, metalish, darker, whatever, but with some appeal, with some face appeal. I got to tell you, I was completely wrong about this match. I really thought this was the Gopher Snacks match, and Nia Jax would goof it up, and it would be a clusterfuck. It was not a clusterfuck, Mike. It was a very solid match, and one I enjoyed tremendously.
Right. We've been asking the question over the past month or so about who's the next in line to be that woman. We know Charlotte's aging. We know they got Rhea, okay? We know Charlotte's aging. We know, Becky probably wants to go and try new movies. And we know, a few of the other women are aging. And we'll get around to Bianca in a little while, and we know that what's-her-name did show up, Jade Cargill did show up, but, and they probably do have plans for her, but Zoe Stark, she got a future. She could be around here for 6 or 7 or 8 years, Lord knows, Rhea Ripley's going to be around here for a while, but there's going to come a time when she and, she's probably going to want to have a baby at some point, Rhea Ripley, with AEW
Buddy Matthews,
right now.
Yeah.
Buddy Matthews. She's probably going to want to have a baby. So Zoe Stark's going to be around here. She's got the size. She's got the athletic ability. She's got a certain charisma about her. She can get this thing done, and she can be a big-time star, and you're right about Rhea Ripley. I said this, the last couple of years when they went over to Saudi Arabia and Rhea Ripley came out and wrestled there. When she came out in that all-black thing that they put her in, that I guess it's a rubber suit or whatever it's made out of, I said, that's what she should be wearing, that right there. Because it makes her look like a badass.
It absolutely changes her image, the way she had her hair, her makeup. Everything was perfect last night. Keep that. Leave the other crapola behind. I don't know. I don't like it. Keep this. Now, Zoe Stark, on the other hand, she has to work on that. Zoe Stark has all the athletic ability, all the skill. She needs to work on her image and a look that's going to be distinct, because she just looks like a woman wrestler. She needs to do something to solidify herself and make herself unique. So if you can work on that a little bit, she's got the rest of it down. And she definitely stood out last night. I was really, really impressed with Zoe Stark. Everybody else looked like also-rans except for Rhea Ripley. It was Zoe Stark and Rhea Ripley. Nia Jax is there because she's big, so she's always a presence. But the other two, Shayna Baszler and Raquel Rodriguez, just felt like, yeah, we're in the match. And that's about it. Tom, I really thought this was going to be a bad match, and it turned out to be a very, very good one.
Yeah, I have to agree there, and I have it in my notes that the standout in this match was Zoe. Zoe, I'm so glad they got Zoe away from Trish Stratus, because that was kind of lame. And she just did things that were just so impressive. And for somebody who we didn't have much faith in coming up onto the main roster, well, that last night changed my opinion. Because Zoe busted her ass. They carried Nia through the whole entire match, so she didn't do anything. The one thing I do have to say is that, well, two things, that Rhea's outfit and her look last night was just off the charts. That was perfect. You can't get any better than that. That's where she needs to stay. The second thing is, I was thinking that because they're in Saudi Arabia, yeah, they're all covered up and not showing skin. But the last time we saw the ladies in Saudi Arabia wrestle, they didn't have any makeup on. And it seems like they're loosening the restrictions, and they had makeup. All of them did. And I was like, wow, this is the second thing that stood out for me anyway. One of the major things that stood out is that the restrictions are being loosened, and that's just very cool. As much as we can say about the Saudi Arabia events, this really impressed me, and the fans knew it too. And the fans were happy about stuff like little things like that matter.
Yeah, listen, there have definitely been some advancements made, put it that way, especially within the WWE. I don't know if there's been any advancements made in their own culture, but what they're allowing the WWE to do, there's been tremendous advancements. And yeah, you're right. Zoe Stark was the standout, and Rhea Ripley's look last night was a keeper. Todd, this was a much better match than I thought.
Oh, yeah, right there. Like you said, that was one of the – I thought it was a great match, too, and that women's fatal five-way match. And – you know, like you said about Rhea Ripley's outfit, I think they should let her wear that more often, not just in Saudi Arabia or anywhere else, also in the States.
I hope she does. Now, the thing about Zoe Stark that I wanted to explain that I like so much is oftentimes in women's wrestling, you will see them really telegraph, especially if they're going to do something high risk. Like they're going to leap out of the ring. They'll literally be like hesitating, like, are you looking at me? Are you looking at me? Okay, here I come. Make sure you catch me. And it's so telegraphed that it's really poor, because you're like, well, come on. If you were really fighting her, you had 5 seconds to move out of the way. Instead, you're standing there with your arm stretched out to clearly catch her and break her fall. And I hate that about wrestling. Zoe Stark does not do that. Just like Sabu, she's just like, here I go, and if you're not ready for me, then I guess I'm crashing and burning. She doesn't take 2 seconds to do it. She just does it. That's the way you're supposed to do it. You don't telegraph it to the point where they're all, here's four girls standing there with their arms out, and you're still climbing the second buckle. She's just like, nope, I'm just launching myself over. Hopefully they remember the spot. She's very good at that, and she does it lightning quick. That's why she took out the cameraman, which was awesome. You can't ask for anything better than that. Cameraman goes down, and it's just like, hey, well, you were in the way. She didn't wait for the cameraman to move. She didn't tell him to move. She thought, well, here we go anyway. That sort of mindset in a professional wrestler is what you need. You got to just do it. This is why everyone is not a professional wrestler. Because logic would tell you, well, let me wait and be safe. This is why not everybody's a NASCAR driver, because not everybody wants to be in a car going 200 miles an hour. This is the thing. So if you're going to be like, well, I'll just be like a typical person. I'll wait and make sure I'm safe, make sure everything's fine. There's a mentality to professional wrestling of, you know, we're going to try to keep each other safe, but I'm not telegraphing all this stuff. I can't wait. I have to do it, and you have to be ready. And Zoe Stark has that. So I hope we see more of Zoe Stark, and I hope they let her do what she can do, because she could be a really, really big asset to this women's division. We then get a Miz segment with, I don't know who the guy is. I'm sure you don't, guys don't either. I guess he is a Saudi Arabian comedian, movie star. I don't know what he is. But he was affable enough. He's okay. He seemed like a fun guy. Grayson Waller coming down and trying to tear apart the set of Miz TV and put his own up. I know there's a lot of people on the internet today saying, oh, this is terrible. This is stupid. I love this. From the minute Grayson Waller came in, I said, oh, man, you got to get him in a feud with the Miz. So, you know, he's basically trying to be the Miz to get him into the feud with the Miz. If this is where this is going, and we're going to have a feud between The Miz and Grayson Waller, sign me up for this. I'm ready for this. You're going to get some great promos. You're going to get some good wrestling. You're going to get some fun stuff in there. I can't think of anything better than this, Mike. So when Grayson Waller came out and did that, I said to myself, here we go. Now, here's a storyline I'd be very interested in following.
Right, and this is going to be a point where This is the perfect guy, because nobody likes Grayson Waller. Nobody.
Right.
And if you want to flip the Miz, this is the perfect guy to flip him with.
Yeah, and they've already sort of done it with Gunther, right? So now they're getting to that point. This is probably what's going to happen. I would imagine Grayson Waller is going to cost The Miz his shot at getting a shot at Gunther. And that's where the feud is going to really escalate. But, Tom, this is one that writes itself. I mean, you can't get a more obvious feud than The Miz and Grayson Waller.
Man, I'm so glad you said you liked it, because I thought I was going to be the only one on this panel that said they liked it. But Grayson Waller coming down and doing like a hostile takeover of Miz TV with the other guy, the Saudi Arabian whatever actor, comedian. Habibi, Miz TV. Habibi, what the hell is Habibi? It was hilarious. That cracked me up, and I thought it was going to be initially. I just thought it was going to be a disaster where Miz was going to just be left on his butt. But this was very entertaining. I give this a thumbs up. This segment went a lot better than I thought it was going to go.
Now, granted, the one thing I didn't like, I'll tell you what I didn't like. Let me caveat that. One thing I did like is that the celebrity did not beat up Grayson Waller. Clearly, The Miz finished him up. And then he just picked the bones of a guy who was hurt. So when this comedian guy did the John Cena elbow thing, it wasn't like it was the first thing that happened. No, this guy got his ass kicked, and The Miz saved him. And then because this guy got his ass kicked and Waller was completely obliterated by The Miz, he was able to get a shot in. So that they did right. Grayson Waller, on the other hand, sold that elbow like he got hit by King Kong fucking Bundy. You can't sell it like that, Grayson. I know you're trying hard to pop the crowd. I know that this guy's a big celebrity. I get it, but he's not a wrestler. It's okay to sell it a little bit, but not to that extent. He went way over the top selling that elbow. That's the only thing I can criticize about this segment. Other than that, I think we're in for some good times with the Miz, Grayson, Waller talk. Todd, are you there? Todd is not there. Okay. Todd is somewhere in the broom closet in the Taj Mahal, apparently. He's still in Saudi Arabia. Anyway, that was a lot of fun. I know a lot of people did not like it, but I thought it was great. We then get to Io Sky versus Bianca Belair. Both of these women did a fantastic job. This is about as good as I've seen Io Sky look. She was very fluid. Now, of course, she's in there with Bianca Belair, and Bianca Belair is going to run you, and she kept right up with her. I saw no major flaws in this match. Bayley coming down was predictable. But Io Sky getting help from Kairi Sane, even though we knew Kairi Sane, and I did mention that Kairi Sane was now officially a WWE in the WWE's current wrestling roster, didn't expect it. Should say this too. I've never seen Kairi Sane look better. She looks like she's muscled up a little bit, trimmed down a little bit. She's got a little bit of a different look to her. It's extremely good. The move she did with the knee off of the guardrail was awesome, sending Bianca Belair into the guardrail. Excellent. Also, I thought what was excellent, and I'm sure they were coached from the production crew to do it, but still, did an excellent job of showing Bayley's dismay about seeing Kairi Sane, because Kairi Sane was put out of the WWE supposedly by Bayley, if you remember. So now they're allowing the fans to remember things and saying, oh, you would have forgot that by now. Bayley seeing Kairi Sane with Io Sky and realizing that they're friends and coming to a realization, this is the woman I literally took out of the WWE, there's going to be some issues now, was fantastic. They're obviously going to form a new team. Please, please, please add Asuka. Please, please, please add Xia Li. Let's get those four women, the four horsemen of Asia, so to speak. Let's get that. Please. As badly as I'd like to see them go against one another, as a team, as a faction, this would be freaking awesome. And then please allow them to do what they can do. Because they can light it up, all of them. Every one of them can light it up. I would love to see this. As soon as this happened, my thoughts were, please let this faction happen. And not just with Asuka. I don't want to, a 3-on-3 sounds great for going against damage control. I get it. They're going to have to add somebody with Dakota Kai. That's fine. You'll find somebody. But eventually, or even right away, please also add Xia Li, so we can get that four women of the four horsemen of Asia sort of thing going. And I think that would just be maybe one of the best factions to hit WWE in a long time, Mike.
It would, but here's the deal. I mean, we've talked about who could be coming from other places, and, well, I mean, think about it. Riho or what's her, or the other one that's AEW, you know, could add to that thing if they could get away from them. But, yeah, put that faction together, and the two reactions that were great was the that didn't match up but were great was the reaction that Bayley gave, but it was also the reaction of both the hug and the smile from what's her name from Io.
Yeah. Well, think about this. You're not going to have Sasha Banks, but if you were to get that four that faction and they were to be like the four horsewomen of Asia, you already have Becky Lynch, Charlotte Flair, and Bayley. You're just one short of having the four horsewomen there against them. I'd love to see it. I think what you're going to see is a Survivor Series match between another member of Damage Control, which they'll come up with right away, and these three women. But I'd like to see it before right away. I really would like to see it before right away. I think that would be outstanding, and I'd be all about that, Tom.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring somebody up from NXT to join the Damage Control. That's definitely, sign me up for that. But I got to tell you that Bianca, much like Drew McIntyre, as we mentioned earlier, didn't even break a sweat. Her cardio is just outstanding, and her and Io put on a very good match. You saw Bianca threw caution to the wind by leaping over the top. And nailing Io Sky, that was awesome. Kairi Sane making her return, I think that the fans were like, "Who's that?" kind of deal, because it was they almost didn't know how to react. My standout, I have it in my notes, much like you did, dude. The reaction they put the cameras on Bayley as Io and Kairi Sane were embracing in the ring. That was phenomenal, because that's something that they think that our attention spans are so short that we wouldn't remember. And here comes Kairi Sane to embrace Io Sky, who's in Damage Control, and Bayley's like, uh-oh. And that was great. That was great booking, great camera work, great reaction by Bayley.
It's great at furthering the storyline, because now you're taking a step forward, right? This is what I said about the Cody Rhodes and Damian Priest match. It took no steps forward. We got a step forward here. Kairi Sane is now here. She's obviously friends with Io Sky. This is going to be trouble for Bayley. We have a step forward. Drew McIntyre lost. We saw Rhea Ripley kind of look at him and shrug her shoulders. That's a step forward. John Cena lost dramatically. Looks like he might retire. We don't know if we're real. That's a step forward. These matches have given us a step forward, most of them. This was the step forward in this match. Now we get to the main event, Roman Reigns versus LA Knight. And listen, this is LA Knight's big chance to prove he belongs. I think he did. It was a fun match. He was very energetic. The problem with this match, if there was one, is I don't think there's a soul in the world that bought into he was winning. False finishes, all the everythings didn't work, because we already knew he wasn't winning. You already know Roman Reigns is not going to lose the belt before WrestleMania, so it was just, it's a moot point. Now, there was a mistake, because when Jimmy Uso put Roman Reigns' foot on the ropes, it was too late, and the referee had counted three. It literally, go watch it. That was a goof. And then the referee just said, no, I didn't count three. But, yeah, you did, sort of. So that's weird. I don't know if they're going to bring it up. I don't know if LA Knight's going to say, technically, I got the three count, and he hit it before he realized it. I don't know. But it didn't look like it was a on-purpose kayfabe mistake. It looked like it was just a mistake. I think fans are getting tired of seeing this, though. I think fans are getting tired of seeing Roman win the same exact way every single time. This is like Judgment Day. It's getting old. It's getting really, really old. So, you know, I don't think this was a main event that lived up to the hype, because again, it felt like we've seen this before. It felt more like a elongated Raw match where you're just like, yeah, I get it. Or SmackDown match, yeah, they're going to come out at some point and they're going to do this and they're going to do that. We get it. Happens every single time. So that gets old. So I don't think it was as good as it could have been. It's not the fault of LA Knight. really the fault of Roman Reigns. It's just the way they got him booked. But at some point in time, you're going to have to switch this up. And if it's not going to be L.A. Knight, and I don't think it is, because I think I know what we're going to be happening here, and I'm all about it. I think L.A. Knight's focus is going to shift to Logan Paul. And can you imagine the battle on the microphone as well as in the ring with L.A. Knight and Logan Paul? That'll be a lot of fun. That will be a lot of fun. Now, I don't know who's left for Roman Reigns. I don't know if they're going to try to pull The Rock out of mothballs. But at the same time that John Cena retires, you can't have The Rock come back and beat the hell out of Roman Reigns because that makes no sense. This could still be the big story of John Cena saying, well, I'm going to retire, but before I do, I want one more crack at the top. And maybe they're still going to do that at WrestleMania. I don't know what their WrestleMania plans are. Some people are still saying, Cody, that's a huge mistake. Because Cody, he's over. I get that he's over, but I don't see him as being the champion. I just don't. There's a lot of matches with Cody that's just like cookie cutter matches, and I know Roman's the same, but he has a different aura about him. So I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work. Either way, fans got their money's worth. About 15-18 minute match, which is pretty good. There was a couple of very close false finishes. None that we really bought into, though. And I was hoping that we were going to further a storyline a little bit more with something else, like, you know, Jey Uso had already got involved, so wasn't getting involved there. But I was thinking John Cena. I was thinking John Cena's going to come down, having lost to Solo, and stop the interference. And if I saw John Cena walking down that rampway, I would have said, Jesus Christ, LA Knight's winning the belt. This is the way they're going to do it. But no such luck. They didn't do it. And it just ended up being, okay, LA Knight is now going to say, well, it took the three of you to do it. And it's left me a little cold. I think it left the crowd cold, too, because they weren't as into this match, Mike, as they were earlier in the night.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, it's a cookie-cutter match and all that stuff. But people who say Roman Reigns isn't a great wrestler, this, even though it's a cookie-cutter match, right, even though it may have been a Raw match, what Roman Reigns did for L.A. Knight, even though L.A. Knight lost the match, he made L.A. Knight, he made him look like he deserves to be in that match with Roman Reigns. That's how good a wrestler Roman Reigns is. That's how much Roman Reigns is firing on. When you got a guy that there may be questions about why is this guy in the match with me, and you make him look like he belongs there and look like he could have absolutely won the match, that's a great wrestler. And to all those people, like I say,
yeah, well, we've said forever, even when Roman was a face and he was getting all of the, we always said, he's a really good wrestler, actually. And he's shown over the time, the bad booking aside, he's very good at what he does. He's very, very good at what he does. And he's usually entertaining to watch. It's not that the match isn't entertaining. It's that you know what's going to happen at the end. You're just waiting for it. You're like, okay, pretty soon so-and-so is going to come down. You check your watch, and you're like, oh, they've got about 10 minutes of the pay-per-view left, 8 minutes. Pretty soon they're going to come down. Oh, here they come. It's too predictable. But that's not his fault. It's not his fault at all. And yes, you're right. He did make LA Knight look like he belonged, and LA Knight does belong. I'm glad for him. But I just don't understand where you're going from here. There are some people who were telling me they're setting up Solo to fight Roman as, you know, for the tribal chiefdom. And I'm like, well, who are they going to root for? Nobody likes Solo and nobody likes Roman. That would be the worst friggin' main event in history because nobody's going to root for either one of them. So you better not be looking in that direction. So it'll be very interesting to see what they come up with because WrestleMania season right around the corner here, and I would like to see some interesting matchups. not some rehashed matchups. Anyway, aside from one or two minor problems, this was a very, very strong premium live event, I thought. I loved the opening match. Yeah, the pre-show match was fine. Opening match was probably stole the show. Opening match was probably the best match of the night. But then we got a shock, at least as far as I'm concerned, a shock loss from John Cena. We got an outstanding match by Logan Paul. We got an outstanding women's five-way match that I thought was going to be junk and turned out to be far from junk. We got a very, very good match with Io Sky and Bianca Belair. And the main event, well, the main event was solid. Only Cody Rhodes and Damian Priest really disappointed me. And it wasn't because it was sloppy or it wasn't because it wasn't solid. It was just, it was really, really cookie cutter to the point where it felt like a house show match. Pay-per-view match should never feel like that. That was the only letdown. And I even liked the Miz spot that nobody liked. So all in all, I would have to say I greatly enjoyed this. I'm going to give it an A-. They've had two really good ones in Saudi Arabia, two really good ones in a row. And just a little bit of Cody Rhodes stuff that I didn't care for that much with Damian Priest is not going to take that much off, just a half step. So A- for me, Tom, what's your thoughts?
Well, I have to comment on the LA Knight Roman match. I loved the match. I loved the fact that there was a lot going on, and I thought I was the only one to see the referee count three. I thought I was the only one to see that, and I knew I was like, did they do it on purpose? But then I watched it again. I slowed it down. I'm like, that looked like a mistake. But they could turn that into something where they could give the story legs. They're like, hey, you know what? Technically, I won because let's show the footage. And they show the footage of the referee counting three and putting the leg on way too late. And they could bring the referee down, and Roman could pull that thing where you don't think I could beat him kind of deal. Like, there's like bar people, everybody from ringside, and it's just Roman and LA Knight one-on-one. And Roman's like hesitant about it, and Paulie rather is hesitant about it, and Roman could say, "You don't think I could beat him, do you?" And have that kind of dissension in the bloodline. They kind of started that a little bit, but that would be awesome.
The thing I do want to happen here is the exact opposite of what happened with Cody Rhodes. When Cody Rhodes lost, after literally every Samoan within 100 miles of the place attacked him, he gets in the ring and basically says, okay, well, you were the better man. Well, that's bullshit. And you see, fans don't like bullshit. I want LA Knight to come out and say, okay, well, I'm out here without a belt, but I'm out here with some video footage. And let me show you exactly why this guy is a champion. Because he has to have this guy do his work for him, this guy do his work for him. He has to have the referee not see this, not see that. He's doing it with smoke and mirrors. He's not tough. He's not great. He's just devious. And this is the way he wins. So if this is the way he wants to win, maybe he'll be champion for life. Because if you're going to let five people come down every single time he wrestles, and that's what's happened, and nobody back there is complaining about it. Everybody's like, oh, Roman beat me. No, Roman hasn't beaten anybody. The bloodline's beaten a whole bunch of people for Roman. It's time he put on his big boy pants and wrestled himself. I think the crowd would really go up in smoke. And then if Roman came out and did that and said, what, do you think I can't beat you one-on-one? And then Paul, no, wait a minute now. Let's not go crazy. You want to just take me one-on-one with nobody around? And I'll ban everybody from ringside. I'll still kick your ass. With Paul saying, oh, no, hold the phone, wait. Would be very interesting. Because then that would make it look like LA Knight just baited Roman Reigns into something he might not be able to handle. Because nobody else has done that. Nobody else comes out and says, you're gonna consider that a win? Let's go take a look at the video footage. How many more people you need to fight your battles? I think LA Knight would be the perfect person to do that, Mike, because it suits his character, and that could lead to some good storytelling.
I think so, too, and that's the thing. And we'll see what happens with this thing. I got to give it an A-minus as well. And the woman I was thinking about was Hikaru Shida. But here's the deal. Think about this. You put those four women together, and you have Bailey, Charlotte, and what's her name? And you add maybe, I don't know, Queen of Spades to that mix. That's your four horsewomen.
Either that or maybe Bianca. She's the one who got screwed over by Kairi Sane and Io Sky, technically. So maybe add Bianca to that mix, Mike, and she'd make a very good addition to that four horsewomen.
Oh yes, and that's the thing. And you've now got a tag team that can possibly dominate in the Sky Pirates. They can possibly dominate the tag team division, plus two singles wrestlers who are buzz saws, and Asuka and Xia Li.
Yeah, I'm all for that. If they can manage to get their version of the four horsewomen together, adding Bianca instead of Sasha, and you want to do the same with Kairi Sane, Io Sky, Asuka, and maybe Xia Li, sign me up for that. What a great match that. Can you imagine that being a Survivor Series match? I mean, I don't know if you can get much better than that. That's freaking awesome. What a great Survivor Series match. I'd be all about that. I think that would be awesome. I think if they don't do that, you are just literally missing a what they call a cripple pitch in softball. Someone is just lobbing you up there a pitch. And if you foul this off or miss it, I don't know, WWE. Todd, what's your rating on this? Then we'll go to match of the night.
I'm going to give it an A-minus as well.
All righty, so let's go to our match of the night. I'm going to veer off course, and I'll tell you why. The match of the night, clearly, in my opinion, is Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins. I think they stole the show. I'm not going to give it match of the night. I'm going to give match of the night to the five-way women's match because I had no expectations, zero, going into that. I thought this was going to be an absolute botch-fest clusterfuck, and it was the exact opposite. So I'm going to give that match. I'm going to give that my favorite match of the night because I truly think they all worked hard. Even Nia Jax did as good as she could. So I'll give that match of the night. I thought that was a really good match, and I thought it made the women's division look exceptionally strong. Obviously, Rhea Ripley looked fantastic in that match, but Zoe Stark really stood out. Nobody else embarrassed themselves in any way, shape, or form. They all looked pretty good. So that exceeded my expectations. Seth Rollins and Drew McIntyre, I already knew that was going to be brilliant. So it being brilliant didn't shock me. That's why I'm going to go with that one. Tom, what's your match of the night?
Match of the night is Seth and Drew, just because everything they did in that match was just a lot of creative stuff, and the fact that it went as long as it did, and I saw that Drew didn't even break a sweat. It was awesome. But my favorite match is actually a two-way tie because I, like you, had no expectations at all for the five-way women's match, and Zoe really stood out, and the ending of the match was just brutal with the Rhea's finisher with Shayna on the bottom. That was insane. And even the three-way submission was kind of cool. I'd never seen anything like that. That was
good.
Awesome.
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, that was really good. That Shayna Baszler had a very good moment in that match where she had three people in a submission hold. Yeah, that was it. Like I said, it was very creative. I really liked that match. Mike, what was your match of the night?
Oh man, you're gonna. I'm gonna go with the whole thing with just because of what happened in that match. It might have been a short match. It might not have been, but Logan Paul.
It was a great match. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I agree with you because
it
was a match that made Logan Paul
a
superstar.
We've said it before with Logan Paul. When you've got a guy that's this young in the sport that is doing the little things the way, almost perfectly, the way he is, you've got something special.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's a good way to put it, too, because that's what it is. There are guys who are athletic enough to do the major things right. There's not that many instinctively does the little things right. That is the difference. You know, I used to equate that with some friends. I would talk about singers, and I would say, this singer is hitting the notes. They're an amateur singer. And you say, yeah, they're hitting all the notes that star is hitting. They have the vocal range of that star. But they don't have the little intangibles. They don't have the emotion. They don't raise their voice on this spot, lower it in this spot, use a little bit of a vibrato on this spot, back off a little on this spot. They don't have that instinct to make the feel because they're not seasoned enough. Years from now, maybe they will have that little, you know, in their voice and be able to realize I got to use these little tools to emote better and things and not just hit the note. Well, you can equate that to wrestling. There's a lot of guys that I just got to hit my spot and do my move right. Yeah, that's the main thing. But then comes, as you get more seasoned, the little things. The facial expressions, the body language, the ring placement, the way you conduct yourself. Every little thing, all these little things, he's already doing right. He's already doing them. I swear to God, if you ask somebody, I guarantee you, if you found a person on the face of this earth that was a professional wrestling coach or teacher or instructor that didn't know Logan Paul from a can of beans, and you showed him a match and said, what's your thought about how long this guy's been wrestling? He'd say 8-10 years, not 5 matches. So, you know, it's bizarre, really. It's almost bizarre because I consider myself pretty up to date on wrestling and pretty well versed in the history. And I don't remember anybody who's taken to it like this quickly. I just don't. Todd, what's your match of the night last night?
I got to go with the women's fatal five-way match.
Can you imagine that two of us would have picked that coming off of Friday show when we said this is going to be the one everybody goes for popcorn during and it's going to be a clusterfuck and we're lucky if Nia Jax doesn't injure two of the other people involved. Can you imagine? So my hats are off to all of them, Nia Jax included. Everybody did a great job and they deserve kudos. WWE did a good job last night. You got to give them credit where credit is due and they did a good job. Not everything was perfect, but damn, what is? What is? And these matches were entertaining. Most of them took us forward in telling a story. I'm looking forward to the Miz feud with Grayson Waller. I'm looking forward to seeing what's next with the Kairi Sane and Io Sky faction. I'm looking forward to seeing maybe Logan Paul, who his next opponent's going to be. I'm going to assume it's Santos Escobar. And then maybe Carlito. But I think by WrestleMania, you might just see it be LA Knight. We got a lot to look forward to here, folks. It was a good event, a very strong event, and give them credit where it's due. I don't know what we're going to see on Monday, but my thought process is that we're going to at least get one more match out of Roman Reigns before WrestleMania. I don't think we're going to get much more because from what I'm hearing, he's not going to be at some of the premium live events that I thought he was going to be at. I think he's going to be at the Royal Rumble, but I don't think he's going to be at Survivor Series, and there's one in between. I don't think he's going to be at that one either. I think we're going to get one more match out of him before WrestleMania. I'm not sure who it's going to be, but it wouldn't surprise me, Mike, if it was a rematch with LA Knight.
It wouldn't be surprising either. And here's something else to think about with Io Sky and the four women. You know, think about this. Io Sky's sister is in AEW right now. She's a referee, but she's in AEW. There could be a chance that they get her back, that the WWE at some point gets her. Can you imagine those four women with Io Sky's sister as maybe a manager? You know?
Yeah. I mean, and they're pushing, by the way, and they're pushing Xia Li, right, because they're doing this thing where the one kick is giving people concussions, and, you know, that was all kayfabe stuff, but, that's what they're pushing her at. If she gives you that kick to the head, not only are you out, Asuka, we know how good she is. They're pushing Io Sky as she's the champion, and after all, she's, you know, the genius of the sky, right, and now you got Kairi Sane back. How can you not follow that blueprint? How can you not do that? You've got all of your ducks in a row for this, and you've got the ability to have these announcers say, there is no four women that we can think of who would be able to overcome the odds of this team. This team is brutal. And then, of course, you got the four horsewomen, but you're minus one. You'd have to add Bianca Belair. You add Bianca Belair, or maybe they're going to add Jade Cargill. I don't know. I'd rather add Bianca Belair. You add Bianca Belair to this, and that's a hell of a team. Can you imagine? Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch and Bayley versus Io Sky, Asuka, Xia Li and Kairi Sane in Survivor Series. You tell me that's not going to be a really good match that fans would want to see? Mike, that's damn close to the main event.
I mean, think about it. If you're getting that type of thing with those type of people, and Charlotte's not, we don't know, but she's 37 years old and all that stuff. And I mean, we know, probably have a good idea that neither one of these groups are very long together. But again, For Survivor Series match, man, I tell you what, that match would be worthy of ending the show with. It really would.
It really would be. Yeah, it really would be. I don't see how you can miss this. I just don't. It's too obvious. It's right there in front of you, and you've got all your ducks in a row. You've even started promoting Xia Li, who was a jabron a few months ago, but now you're starting to promote her better. This is a no-brainer. I'd take that in a heartbeat, Tom. That sounds like a great Survivor Series matchup.
Yeah, for sure. They gave us a lot of branches on that tree for this story. And how great would it be to even name it like the Four Horsewomen East versus Four Horsewomen West for War Games?
Yeah,
that just
absolutely.
Like how great would that be? Make that the main event. If you want to feature a women's match in a pay-per-view, that's what I'd pay to see. And if it was local,
that's
I'd
it.
Go
that's
there.
Right. If you want a legitimate women's match that you say this is worthy of being the main event, that's it. That's definitely it. You know how long they've been teasing the Four Horsewomen and never gave it to us? And then we thought, well, we'll never get it because obviously Sasha Banks is gone. Well, Bianca Belair make a very good fourth. So I'd be all for that. Anyway, pretty damn good event last night. We're looking forward to Monday. We'll be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw Report. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.